B'siyata d'shmaya, we're going to learn Erubin Daf Lamed Aleph. We're going to start 9 lines from the bottom of Daf Lamed Omed Beis. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda Oimer Af Beis HaKvoris. We're going back to the Mishnah on Daf Chavov Omed Beis, and the discussion is, where can you put an Eruv Tchumin? It has to be a place where the person who the Eruv is for can actually reach. According to some, he has to be able to eat the Eruv, and not only be able to go there. So we saw in the Gemara that according to the Tanakhama, you're allowed to put an Eruv Tchumin even in a Beis HaPras. What's a Beis HaPras? A Beis HaPras is a field where, at this point in time, we know where there was a grave once, but there was somebody who dug up the grave, and now we have a doubt, did some bones get dug up as well? And now the whole field may have parts, fragments of a dead corpse lying around on its surface, and therefore it's going to be tomei, and the kohen is not allowed to go through. So the Tanakhama says you're even allowed to put an eruv for a kohen. Only a kohen is not allowed to go through a field which is tomei, and you can put an eruv of him in a beis hapras. And the Gemara we learnt in the previous shiur, earlier on this Omud, on Daf Lamed Omud Beis, explained that a kohen is actually allowed to go through a beis hapras under certain conditions where there's no risk of him actually going over any of the bone or going over the kever or touching and moving any of the bone fragments. However, in a beis hakvoros, there you're not allowed to put an eruv for a kohen because a kohen is not allowed to go into a beis hakvoros, into a cemetery. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilu bein hakvoris, even amongst the graves, even in a cemetery, you're allowed to put an eruv for a kohen. Mipnei sheyochid lochutz, he can go there with a type of a mechitza, a type of separation between himself and the graves around him. Veleilech velechol, he can go and he can even eat the eruv that's there. So according to Tanakhama, you cannot put an eruv in a beis hakvoros in a cemetery, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can. There is a difference between a cemetery where there are lots of graves that are there, and it's almost impossible for a kohen to go there under normal circumstances without becoming tomei, without hovering over a grave which is oihel, and somebody who is mahil, somebody who covers over a grave, over a dead body, over a grave, is tomei, and a kohen is not allowed to make himself tomei. And then there's a single grave, not in a cemetery, just a grave. Is a kohen allowed to go right up to a grave? And it's definitely easier, because if there's only one grave there, then he can be careful not to hover over it. And even though a kohen is not really allowed to get so close to a grave, but that's only an issa midrabbanon, min haTorah, the main problem is that he's not going to hover over the grave. And that's something where in a cemetery, it's going to happen by default. On a single grave, in a regular field, that's less likely to happen, or it's easier for him to protect himself. And the Gemara is not going to make a very big distinction between the two, but Rashi keeps switching and speaking about a single grave and a cemetery. So those are the differences between the two. Let's see the Gemara inside. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Af Beis HaKvoros. Tana, mipnei sheyochei lochutz veleilech b'shido teva umigdol. The reason that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can even put an eruv for a kohen in a cemetery is because the kohen can actually go into the cemetery by making a separation between himself and the tumah around him. How does he do that? By going into a carriage, a crate, or a closet, and we're assuming that this shido, teva, or migdol, the carriage, crate, or closet, is a large enough, it's a utensil. Utensils are makabel tumah, they can receive tumah, they certainly cannot separate between the person inside it and tumah. So it must be that they do not have the status of a utensil that can become tumah, and that is if they are large enough that they cannot be carried when they are full. And that is the size of 40 saw. If it can contain 40 saw of liquid, then it's large enough that it will not become tomei. If they will not become tomei, then they can serve as a separation between the person inside it and the tumah around him. Says the Gemara Kosova, it must be Rabbi Yehuda holds Oihel Zoruk. Oihel is a tent, and it's what we're trying to make a type of partition, as if the Kohen is homed in, is secluded in a type of home with its own partitions, its own boundaries. And here you see that a type of carriage, crate, or closet, which is actually movable, it must be movable, otherwise the Kohen wouldn't be able to travel inside it, that even a movable tent is considered a partition between the Kohen inside it and the Tumah outside him. That's called Oyel Zoruk, a moving tent. Shmei Oyel, it's considered an Oyel, it's considered as if he's in his own Roshus, in his own place, and therefore he will not become Tomei. Or Beplukta Dehani Tanoi, and it's actually a Machloikas Tanoim. Detanya Hanichnas L'Eretz Ha'amim, if somebody goes into the land of the nations, which is outside Eretz Israel, and there also there is a Tumah in the air of the Eretz Ha'amim, and if he goes in Beshida Teva Omigdol, he goes into the airspace of the Eretz Amim, into the nation, into the lands of the nations, and he goes in a carriage, crate, or closet, Rebbe Matami, Rebbe says that he still becomes Tommy, because he holds that this closet, this carriage, the crate, the Shida Teva Omigdol is moving, therefore it cannot serve as a partition between the person inside it and the tomb around him. Rabbi Yehuda argues and says that it does serve as a chatzitza, as a separation between himself and the avir of the tumas eretz amim, and therefore he is toyer. But Michael Miflegi, what is the point of their argument? On what point are they arguing? Marasova oil zorok lav shmei oihel. Rebbe holds that an oihel zorok, a moving oihel, is not considered an oihel, therefore it cannot serve as a partition. Or Marasova, Rebbe Yisib Rebbe Yehuda holds oil zorok, shmei oihel. V'hoda tanya Rebbe Yehuda oimer ma'arvin l'koyin tohir b'chuma tohira b'kever. Heicha ozel b'shido teva migdol. So now the Gemara is moving one step further. We learned in a brisa that Rabbi Yehuda says that you're allowed to make an eruv tchumin for a kohen, ma'arvin lekohen toher, for a toher kohen, betruma tohera. You're allowed to, not only is it a kohen who is toher, you're even using truma tohera. Truma tomea, even Israel is not allowed to eat. A kohen tomei is not allowed to eat. Truma tohera. Since it's a toher kohen, and it's Truma Tahira, you're allowed to even use, you're allowed to make an Eruv Tchumin in such a fashion, Bekever, even on a Kever. A Kever is a grave. It's talking here about a single grave, not a Beis HaKvaros, and it's a good Eruv. Asks the Gemara, Heicha Ozil, how's the Kohen going to go to the Kever? A Kohen is not allowed to go near a Kever, is not allowed to go adjacent to a Kever because of the Tumah. Answers the Gemara, Beshido, Teva, Omigdol. If he's inside a carriage, a crate, or a closet, which is large enough that it does not become Tomei itself, it serves as a separation. So you see clearly that Rabbi Yehuda, in this Brisa, and this is actually the Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah also, says that an Oihel Zoruk, Shmei Oihel, asks the Gemara, okay, so we know how the Kohen can go up until the grave, and he's got a teva, a migdol, a shida, and that's going to stop him from actually becoming Tomei. It will stop him from hovering over the grave itself. V'akiven de'ochso, as soon as he put the food, which is the truma tahira, on top of the grave, itmele, the food became Tomei. And if the food is Tomei, we're talking here about truma. Truma becomes Tomei. No one is allowed to eat it. Answers the Gemara, b'shaloi huchshira. We're talking about a type of food item that is not susceptible to tuma. And there are different conditions when food items can become Tomei. One of them is that it has to have been exposed to liquids, to one of the seven specific types of liquids before becoming Tomei. And if it was not exposed to any of those liquids, it will not become Tomei. And here we're talking about Truma Tahira that had not yet been exposed to those liquids. Therefore, it will not become Tomei. oishen ilusha b'mei peiros, or if it's a bread that was kneaded with fruit juices, not with water, it will not become tomei. Asks the Gemara, okay, so we know how the kohen can get till the grave. We know how you can put the eruv, how you can put the truma Torah on top of the grave. V'heicha maisilo, how is the kohen going to bring the truma Torah to eat it? We are assuming now that he has to be able to eat the truma. And indeed, this is following Sumchus. Sumchus says you can only make an eruv with something that you can actually eat. How is he going to take the truma Torah? He's going to put his hands over the grave and take the truma. He's going to become tomei if his hand goes over the grave. Answers the Gemara, b'pshutei klei eitz delo mekabel tuma. He's going to use a utensil, and he's going to bring the truma to himself using a long utensil, and the utensil is not going to become tomei, because the utensil itself is number one made of wood, and number two, it does not have a receptacle. And the halacha is that something made of wood, metal is different, but if it's made of wood and does not have a receptacle, will not become tomei. And therefore, this utensil, the wooden utensil, will not become tomei. He'll pull the food item that was on the grave when Shabbos came in, he'll pull it towards him, and he is in his box outside beyond the grave, and he'll be able to eat the truma. Asks the Gemara b'hokom mahil, says it doesn't matter whether it's considered a kli or not, as far as the utensil itself becoming tomei, but since this utensil is probably a tefach wide, and even if it's not a tefach wide, it may have the circumference of a tefach, in either of those cases, the very fact that this utensil is hovering over the grave, and it must be, because the food is over the grave, is on the grave, as soon as he puts this spoon or this kli eitz without a receptacle, but as soon as it's hovering over the grave, then this kli eitz is now serving as an oihel also over the grave, also over the kohen, because the kohen is holding one end of it, and the other end of it is over the grave, and we know that tumah travels underneath anything which is a tefach wide. So this kli eitz is going to actually transmit the tuma from the grave to the kohen. V'hokom ma'il, this kli eitz is going to serve as an oihel. Answers the Gemara, d'maisi lo achiri, that the part that is near the kohen is the back part of this kli eitz, which is actually a narrower part. The part that's near the kohen is not a tefach in circumference, and obviously not a tefach wide, and therefore it will not transmit the tumah to the kohen. Asks the Gemara, Yehocha maita amad rabbonon. We saw in our Mishnah that according to the Tanakhama, you cannot put a truma tahira onto a grave, into a beis hakvoros for the kohen. Well, why not? We have a perfect solution. Why is it? Why is it that according to the Chachomim, you're not allowed to put an eruv in a graveyard, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, you are allowed to? It seems that all the solutions that Rabbi Yehuda has offered would work even according to the Chachomim. Answers the Gemara. We're going to have three different suggestions to understand what's the point of the argument, on what point are the Chachomim and Rabbi Yehuda arguing. Says the Gemara, Kosovar osur liknois bayis b'isuri hano. Says, when making an eruv is, so to speak, a type of a acquiring. It's a kinyan. You koina shvisa. It's as if I acquired this place, as if this is my place of residence at the onset of Shabbos. Since his food item is on the grave, then he's deriving benefit from the grave, because the grave is serving as his place of residence. The Chachomim say that the issue here is not, can the kohen get there, can he take the food? The problem is, you're deriving benefit from a grave, you're not allowed to do that. Michlal, so we could deduce from that, if that's what the Chachomim hold, the Rabbi Yehuda sovar mutar. Rabbi Yehuda says, you are allowed to derive benefit in this way. Well, does anybody allow you to derive benefit from a grave? The answer is no, no one is allowed to. But Rabbi Yehuda says, kosova mitzvahs lav lehonis nitnu. Why am I making this Eruv? In order to allow me to go beyond my 2,000 amos out of the Tchum, And I'm going there for a Dvar Mitzvah. I'm not going there just to have fun. I'm going there because I want to do a mitzvah in that place. And something that you do for the sake of a mitzvah, it's not considered as having personal benefit. So since I'm making the Eruv to do a mitzvah, it's not considered that I'm benefiting from a grave, and therefore it's mutter, according to Rebbe Yehuda. Asks the Gemara, if that's the machlekas, elahod omar rova mitzvah islav lehonis nitnu, then, because according to what we just said now, it seems the machlekas Tanakam and Rebbe Yehuda is whether mitzvah is lehonis nitnu or not lehonis nitnu, because they both agree that the reason you make the Eruv is to do a mitzvah. So the Chachomim say it's also to do it. They say that we do not apply the rule of mitzvahs lav lehonis nitnu, and Rebbe Yehuda says you do. Does that mean hod omar rova mitzvahs lav lehonis nitnu leimu ketanoi omru lishmaitei? Is it probable that Rova and Amoira, who he was the one that coined the term mitzvahs lav lehonis nitnu, actually depends, it's dependent on a machlokes tanoim? Omar lecha Rova, Rova says no, because it's not so comfortable for an Amoira to say a halacha and then to have tanoim that are arguing with him. So Rava says no. Isviru lohu de'ein ma'arvin elo ledvar mitzvah, in the event that the only time you make an eruv is only for a mitzvah, to kule alma mitzvahs lav lehonis nitnu, even the chachomim would allow you to make an eruv there. V'hocha b'hocha miflugi. Here they're arguing on a slightly different point. They're not arguing, do you say mitzvahs lav lehonis nitnu or not? They're arguing, mar sovar ein ma'arvin elo ledvar mitzvah. Rabbi Yehuda says that the only reason you ever make an eruv is only for a mitzvah. Therefore, mitzvahs lav lehonis nitnu, you can put your eruv there. Or mar sovar, however the Tanakama hold, ma'arvin afilu ledvar rishus. You make an eruv even for your own reasons, even if you don't want to do a mitzvah. And if so, if you're going to put an Eruv on a grave, and in the event that you're putting the Eruv there not only to do a mitzvah, then you're having personal benefit from the grave, and that will be awesome. Therefore the Chachomim said you're not allowed to put an Eruv on a grave. Asks the Gemara, if so, there's a machlokes tanoim whether you're allowed to make an Eruv, tchumin, for something that's not a mitzvah. Eloha de Omar of Yosef, it was Rav Yosef, he was the one that coined the term Ein ma'arvin elo ledvar mitzvah, you only make an Eruv for a dvar mitzvah. Leimu ketanoi omro leshmaitei? Could it be that what he said was dependent on a machlokes tanoim? Omro lecha Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef will say no. Dekule alma ein ma'arvin elo ledvar mitzvah. I, Rav Yosef, hold that everybody, the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda, agree you only ever make an Eruv for a dvar mitzvah. Udekule alma mitzvahs lav lehonis nitnu, and both the Chachomim and Rabbi Yehuda agree that if something you do for a mitzvah is not considered, you're deriving benefit. So what they're arguing? What's the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda arguing? Ubahakum iflugi, they're arguing as follows. Marasova kiven dekonole Eruv, loinichle lemintura. All the while, when do you need the food, the Eruv, to be there? Only until the onset of Shabbos. Only during twilight, during Bein HaShemoshes. And that point is where you gain possession and you're claiming the place as being your place of residence on Shabbos. And that's what I need in order to allow me to do my mitzvah and go 2,000 amos outside the original Tchum. What happens the moment that Tzeisak Rechovim, it's already not Bein HaShemoshes. At this point, even if you are to eat up the Eruv, at that point, you don't need the Eruv anymore. Once the Eruv was Chal, once it became valid when Shabbos came in, then that's enough. From this point on, it's no longer a mitzvah to have the food there. The question is, do I want the food there? Do I need the food there? Or do I say, no, I just needed it there in order to be a valid Eruv. The moment it's a valid Eruv, I couldn't care about the food anymore. So Marasovar Nichalei Dmintra, according to the Tanakama says, even though I put the Eruv there in order to become a valid Eruv to allow me to do a mitzvah, and even though that part is, it seems that I'm having Hanor from that, it's allowed, because mitzvahs lav lehonis nitnu. I'm allowed to do that, even though I'm putting it onto a grave. However, I want the food to stay there even after the Eruv is valid. Now it's no longer a dvar mitzvah, but you're having benefit from the grave, and therefore it's asa. Di itzrich ochelei, because if he'll need to, he'll want to eat the food afterwards. And therefore he wants it to be protected there, he wants it to stay there. You're deriving benefit from a grave. However, according to Rabbi Yehuda says, once the Eruv is valid, I don't mind anymore. I don't care what happens to the food, and therefore I'm not intending to have any benefit from the grave beyond serving my mitzvah, and therefore you're allowed to put an Eruv on the grave. Continues the next Mishnah. And as we've learned till now, an Eruv Tchumin is only valid if the food items are edible. According to Sumchas, at least, the food items have to be edible to the person who made the Eruv. It's not even good enough if it's edible for somebody else, but if it's not edible for anyone, it certainly cannot be a good Eruv according to anyone. So now we're going to speak about different types of food items, their different halachic classifications as to what can and cannot be used for an Eruv. Says the Mishnah, Ma'arvin b'dmai. Food, produce that's been purchased from an Am Haaretz, somebody that you're not sure whether he took all the Trumas and Maestras appropriately, and there's a halacha that you have to, the attitude towards this food has to be as a sophic, as if it's a doubt whether the Trumas and Maestras were taken, and certain parts of the Trumas and Maestras have to be taken again, l'chumra, just to be on the safe side, and there are different halachas as to what happens to the Trumas and Maestras after you take them. It's different to taking Trumas and Maestras from something that it's clear that the Trumas and Maestras have not been taken yet. But either way, if you have demai, you have produce purchased from an Am Haaretz, then even if you have not taken the Trumas and Maestras again as you should, you're allowed to use the demai food for an Eruv. And the Gemara is going to ask, you're not allowed to eat it. Why? How are you allowed to use it? But the Mishnah says you're allowed to use it. We know that after the owner gives Truma Gedoila to the Kohen, he gives Maisa Rishon. Truma Gedoila is approximately 2%. Of what's left, he gives 10% as Maisa Rishon. He's got to give that to the Levi. And the Levi has to give, of that Maisa Rishon, the Levi gives 10% to the Kohen, called Trumas Maisa. Ubamaisa Rishon Shenotlo Trumosi. If you have Maisa Rishon that the Levi took Trumas Maisa from, you're allowed to use it for an Eruv. The Gemara is going to discuss what's the Chiddush. Why not? Ubamaisa Sheini Vehekta Sheniftu. We know that after the owner gives the 10% to the Levi, there's another 10% which he has to take off in year 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the Shemitah cycle, and that's called Maisa Sheni, and he has to take it to Yerushalayim and eat it there. If he cannot take it to Yerushalayim, he can, so to speak, redeem it on money. Now, and the money gets taken to Yerushalayim, and food items are bought with it in Yerushalayim. So, if you have Maisa Sheni fruits, Sheniftu, that you've redeemed them on money, now the Maisa Sheni fruits, the produce of Maisa Sheni has no longer got the Kedush of Maisa Sheni. You're allowed to use it outside Yerushalayim. You can use it as for your Eruv. The Hekdush, if you had something that belonged to Hekdush, also Sheniftu, you've redeemed it from Hekdush, you're allowed to use it now for your own purposes. You're allowed to use it to make an Eruv. Even though you're not allowed to make an Eruv with Hekdush, but over here that you've already redeemed the Hekdush, and now the Kedusha is now on the money that redeemed the Hekdush, and the original Hekdush food is no longer Hekdush, you can use it for an Eruv. Again, we have to understand what's the Chiddush. V'akeyanim b'chala. Chala, when a person makes a dough that's large enough, he takes part of the bread, part of the dough, and he gives it to the Kohen, called chala. It has the similar halachas to truma. A Kohen is allowed to use it to make an Eruv. He's allowed to eat it. He can do what he wants with it. All that list is a list of things you can make an Eruv with. Avol, now we're going to have a list of things you cannot use for an Eruv. Loi betevel, if you have produce that it's clear that Trumas and Maestras have not been taken from it, you're not allowed to eat it. It's severely osur to eat tevel. You cannot use it for an Eruv. Veloi b'maisa rishon sheloinu tlot trumosai. If you have maisa rishon that the Levi did not give the Trumas Maisa to the Kohen, then you obviously cannot use it for an Eruv. V'loi b'maisa sheini v'hektish shaloi niftu. If you have maisa sheini or hektish, which has not yet been redeemed, you cannot use it for an Eruv. That's the Mishnah. Says the Gemara, demai, you're saying that you're allowed to use demai, which is produce purchased from an amoretz, and it could be that he hasn't taken chumas and maishas properly. Holoi chazile, he's not allowed to eat it in this fashion and state. How can you use it for an eruv? Says the Gemara, no. There's something you can do, potentially, that would allow you to eat the demai, even in its demai state. And since you could put yourself in a position that you're allowed to eat it, it's called that it's fit for this person. What could this person do that would allow him to eat demai? Diboya mafker leila nechose, he could renounce ownership on all his possessions. Then he will have the halachic status of a poor person. V'hava oni, he'll be a poor man. V'chozile, and for a poor man, he's allowed to eat demai. Hashtanami chozile, now, even though he has not been mafkir all his nechosim, he's not a poor man, nonetheless, you can't say it's not fit for him. I could do something that would allow me to eat it. Ditnan, we saw in the Mishnah, machilin es anim demai, the Mishnah says you're allowed to feed poor people with demai. Whereas the Achsanya and the soldiers, the Jewish soldiers of the army, they are allowed to eat demai. And since this person could have made himself into a poor man, and then he would be allowed to eat demai without taking chumas and maishas, therefore even now he's allowed to use it for his eruv. Omer of Huna, Tana, we learnt that Bishamay Oimrim Ein Machilin Es Aniyim Demai or Bishilil Oimrim Machilin Es Aniyim Demai. This is actually a Machlekes Tanoim. Bishamay say that even a poor man is not allowed to eat Demai, and Bishilil say that he is allowed to eat Demai. And obviously the Mishnah that says that you can use Demai for an Eruv on the assumption or on the basis that you could become an Oni and eat Demai is obviously following Bishilil. Continues the Gemara. We learnt in the Mishnah, "Ubamay Sarisha in Shenot Lot Ramosai." If a Levi who had Maisarisha and he took off the Trumas Maisa, gave it to the Kohen, he's allowed to use the Maisarisha for an Eruv. Asks the Gemara Pshita. Of course, if the Levi took off the Trumas Maisa, now he can do what he wants with it. He's allowed to eat it. What's the Chiddush? Says the Gemara Loi. Tricha, there is a Chiddush here. Sheikdimu Bashibolin. And just a short introduction to understand this, we're going to need it a little bit later again. The correct sequence of events is that the owner first gives Truma Gedoyla 2% to the Kohen, then he gives the 10% of what's left to the Levi, of which the Levi gives 10% to the Kohen called Truma Smaisa. At what point is the owner required to give to the Kohen his Truma Gedoyla? Only once the food has become threshed, has been piled up, has been turned into grain. That's called that it's already in a kri. And then he's mechuyev to give, at that point the owner is mechuyev to give the Trumas and the Maishas. Before that, he's not mechuyev to give the Trumas and Maishas yet. The stage before that is called Bashibolim, that the produce is still in its ears. It's ears of wheat or barley or whatever he's doing, and it's not yet kri, it's not yet called a grain. The Levi knows that if I wait for the owner to do things in the right sequence of events, he's going to give 2% of his produce to the Kohen, and of the 98% that's left, he's going to give me 10%, which is 9.8% of the whole produce. The Levi says, that's a shame. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the owner before he gives the Kohen the Truma Gedoyla. I'm going to ask him for my 10%. And then I'm going to get not 9.8% from the owner. I'm going to get 10% from the owner. It's worth my while. So we're talking here about a Levi that came to the owner and took his share of Maaser Rishon before the owner had an opportunity to give the Truma Gedoyla to the Kohen. So over here when it says that Maaser Rishon, sorry, Shenitla Trumasoi, it's not talking like we said before that the Chiddush is not that he took Trumas Maaser. Of course he took Trumas Maaser. The Chiddush is that from this produce, Truma Gedoyla has not yet been taken. So I may have thought that since Truma Gedoyla has not been taken, I may have thought that you're not allowed to eat from the Levi, is not allowed to eat from this Maaser Rishon, and therefore he cannot use it for the Eruv. The Mishnah says you can use it for the Eruv. So let's see that in the Gemara. Sheikdimoy b'shibolin, the Levi came and took his Maaser Rishon when it was still in its shibolim state. It was still in the ears. It was not yet thrashed and piled up. V'notlo mimeno trumas maisa, and he separated trumas maisa. V'loy notlo mimeno truma gedoyla, but he did not separate the truma gedoyla that should have been taken before he took his maisa rishon. Ukadu rabavo amr Rish Lakish, and the halacha conforms to what Rish Lakish said. Da amr rabavo amr Rish Lakish, maisa rishon sheikdimoy b'shibolin. Maaser Rishon that was taken before the produce had the status of a grain, before it was thrashed and piled, potur mitruma gedoyla. At that point, what the Levi took, he has to take trumas maisa. He does not need to take the 2% and give it to the kohen. Shenemar, and this is learned from a pasuk. The pasuk says, "V'hari moisem mimenu trumas Hashem maiser mina maiser." The Levi has to give to the Kohen of his Maaser Rishon, and he has to take Maaser mina Maaser, 10% of that 10%, called Trumas Maaser, and give it to the Kohen. So the Gemara says, Rish Lakish says, Maaser mina Maaser amarti lecha. The Levi only has to separate Trumas Maaser. V'loi Truma gedoyla v'Trumas Maaser mina Maaser. Since the Pasuk says that the Levi only has to take Trumas Maaser, you see from there that the Levi does not have to take Truma Gedoyla, even if he took the Maaser Rishon from produce that Truma Gedoyla had not yet been taken. Omale Rav Papa Labaya, Rav Papa now questioned Abaya, if you have a pasuk that says that a Levi only ever has to take Truma Smaiser from the Maaser Rishon and not Truma Gedoyla, Ihochi if so, afilu ikdimoy bikri, even if the produce has already been thrashed and piled, and now the owner has to already give Truma Gedoyla to the Kohen. But the Levi came before the Kohen and took his 10%. Even in that case, are we going to say that the Levi is exempt from taking Truma Gedoyla? Even if when he took his Maaser Rishon, it was already in a produce state? It was already in a grain state? Afilu Gdimei Bekri Nami? Omar Leit? So Abaya said to Rav Papa, Olech Omar Kro, it's because of this, what you're suggesting, that we have an explicit pasuk that says, Mikol Mas Reiseichem Torimu Eskol Trumas Hashem. That from your Maisa, you have to take all the Trumas. So if you Levi, not only do you have to take Trumas Maisa from your Maisa Rishon, you also have to separate Truma Gedoyla in the event that you took your Maisa Rishon before the owner gave the Kohen, the Truma Gedoyla. So you have an explicit pasuk that says that the Levi has to take all the trumos, including truma gedoyla. So we have, so to speak, a contradiction in the psukim. In one pasuk it says that the Levi only takes trumas maisa. In another pasuk it seems to say that he takes even truma gedoyla. And it's apparent in the Gemara that it depends when the Levi took it. If the Levi took it before it was in the grain state, when it was still in the shibolim state, then he does not have to take the Truma Gedoyla. If he took it once it was already thrashed and piled, at that point, where there's already a chiyuv, the chiyuv of the owner to give it to the Kohen has already set in, if the Levi preempts the Kohen then and takes the Maaser Rishon, he does have to take Truma Gedoyla from it. Asks the Gemara Mar Isa, you have two psukim. One pasuk says that the Levi takes Truma Gedoyla from the Maaser Rishon. Another pasuk says it doesn't take Truma Gedoyla. What tells you that the pasuk that says that you have to take Truma Gedoyla from the Maaser Rishon is talking about that he takes it after it's already piled up, and the pasuk that says that the Levi does not need to take Truma Gedoyla is talking about before it was, he took it before it was piled up? Who says that that's how you're supposed to learn the psukim? And that's how Rashi seems to learn. Tosfos says that the Gemara is not suggesting that the Levi took it in the earlier state, when it was still in the state of Shibolim, then he is chayev to take Truma Gedoyla. But if he took it in the Kri state, in the grain state, then he's not chayev. That doesn't make sense. That if the Levi took it at an even later stage, he should then become exempt from taking Truma Gedoyla. There's no logic in that. So Tosfos says that we're suggesting that maybe the pasuk that says that you're potur from taking Truma Gedoyla applies also to the stage of taking the Maaser Rishon when it was already heaped up. And the pasuk that says you have to take Truma Gedolah is talking about a stage even further, and that's Re'ah Pnei Abayis, when the produce has already been brought into the storehouse, into the home. And if it's been taken into the home, then it's got a much more stringent level requirement of taking Trumas and Maasros. And only at that point, if the Levi took the Maaser Rishon before the Truma Gedolah, he has to take Truma Gedolah. Either way, Umar or Isa, why are you learning this? Why are you learning that one pasuk? The bottom line: if the Levi takes the tavua, takes this produce after it's already been piled up, we learn from the pasuk he has to take Truma Gedolah. How? Why is it so clear to you that that's the halacha? Says the Gemara. I'll explain it to you. Because before it was piled up, it was not yet called produce. It was not yet called grain. It was just called shibolim. It's called produce. It wasn't called grain. If it's not called grain, it makes sense that the owner was not yet chayev to take truma, and therefore the Levi who took it at that stage is also not chayev to take truma gedola. However, after it's been piled up, it's already called dogon. It's already called a grain. Once it's called a grain, then the owner's already chayev to give it to the kohen. Since the owner's chayev to give it to the kohen, if the Levi takes it at that point, before the kohen took his truma gedola, the Levi has to take truma gedola. Either way, coming back to our Mishnah, Maaser Rishon Shenot La Trumasi, the chiddush is that we're talking about the Levi took the Maaser Rishon when it was in its shibolim state. It was not yet thrashed and piled. And he took the Maaser Rishon before the owner had an opportunity of taking the Truma Gedolah. The Chiddush of the Mishnah is that even though Truma Gedolah was not taken, you're allowed to use it for an Eruv, because indeed the Levi is exempt of taking the Truma Gedolah. And that's the Chiddush that's alluded to in the Mishnah. Continues the Gemara. Ubamaisa Sheini veHekdash Sheniftu. We saw in the Mishnah that if you had Maaser Sheini or Hekdash that you're not allowed to use for an Eruv, and you redeemed them, now you can use it for an Eruv. Says the Gemara, Pshita, if you redeemed it, of course you can use it for an Eruv. Why not? Says the Gemara, Loi, it's not so posh. Tzricha, the Mishnah has to tell it to us for the following reason. Shenosan es hakeren velenosan es hachimish. When redeeming Hegdash and Maaser Sheini, then you have to add a fifth, which means you add on 25% of the original value, which is a total of an extra 20%, and you have to add that on when redeeming it. So if the original truma, if the original Maaser Sheini or the original Hekdash was worth 20 shekel, you have to now put aside, you have to redeem it with 25 shekel. And this person, he redeemed it, but he did not add the extra chaymish, the extra fifth. V'kumash malon de'ein ha'chaymish ma'akav. Even though he's required to add the chaymish, but all the while he hasn't added the chaymish, I may have thought that that deems the whole redeeming as invalid, and then it's considered Maaser Sheini and Hekdash Shaloi Niftu. Says the Mishnah, no. Since you redeemed it on the keren, on its real value, it's valid. You're allowed to use it for the Eruv, even though you have not yet added the chaymish. Continues the Gemara, Avaloi betevel. The Mishnah said you're not allowed to use tevel, which is produce that Trumas and Maasros have not been taken from it. You're not allowed to use it for an Eruv. Says the Gemara, Pshita, of course not. You're not allowed to eat it. It's severely asur to eat tevel. Of course you cannot use it for an Eruv. Says the Gemara, Loi, tzricha betevel tovel midrabonon. The Chiddush of the Mishnah is that even though min hatoira, it's not tevel, one does not need to take Trumas and Maasros, only midrabonon one has to take Trumas and Maasros. Nonetheless, you're not allowed to eat it, and therefore you cannot use it for an Eruv. What's a case where a person is only chayev to take Trumas and Maasros midrabonon, not min hatoira? Or kegoin shezaroi ba'otitz she'enoi nokuv, if he planted it, if he sowed it in a utensil that is not got any holes in it, and therefore whatever's growing in it is not nourishing from the earth itself, and something that grows in a pot, in a flower pot that has no holes in it, is only chayev in Trumas and Maasros midrabonon. The chiddush is that if you didn't take Trumas and Maasros, you're not allowed to use it for an Eruv. Continues the Gemara, v'loy b'maaser rishon sheloy nitlot trumasi. If you have maaser rishon that Trumas Maaser has not been taken, That means the Levi did not take 10% of his 10% that he got from the owner and didn't give it to the Kohen. You cannot use it for the Eruv. Says the Gemara, Pshita, of course not. The Levi is not allowed to use it. He's not allowed to do anything with it until he takes the Trumas Maisa. Says the Gemara, Loi. Tzricha sheikdimoi bekri. We're not talking about that he didn't take Truma Gedayla. He didn't take Truma Smaisa. Of course he took Truma Smaisa. But the Mishnah is talking about Lo Notlo Trumasai. Yep, he didn't take Truma Gedayla. The owner was supposed to take 2% and give it to the Kohen. The Levi came before the owner managed to do that and took his 10%. And the halacha is that the Levi now has to give the Kohen his 2% that he didn't get from the owner, that the Kohen didn't get from the owner. And the Levi, even though 10% of his own 10%, Trumas Maisa, he gave the Kohen, but he didn't give the Kohen the Truma Gedayla. That's considered Maisar Sheini, Maisar Rishon Sheloi Notlo Trumasoi, and you're not allowed to use it for the Eruv. When did the Levi take it? He didn't take it when it was in the Shibolim state, as we learned before. If the Levi took it from the Shibolim state, he doesn't have to give the Kohen Truma Gedayla. So that cannot be the case of Maisa Rishon Sheloi Notlo Trumasoi, that he's not allowed to use it for the Eruv. So it must be he took it in the Kri state. It must be it was already in a grain state. It was already thrashed and piled. And if the Levi took it at that stage, before the Kohen took his Truma Gedayla, the Levi is required to take the Truma Gedayla and give it to the Kohen before eating it. And we're talking here that the Levi didn't. If he didn't, you cannot use it for an Eruv. So what's the Chiddush? If he took it in the state of, in the Kri state, in the grain state, and he's required to take Truma Gedayla, and he didn't, then of course you cannot use it. What's the Chiddush? What's the Mishnah coming to teach us? Says the Gemara, Mao de Tema Kada Omale Rav Papa La Abaya. I may have thought that Rav Papa is right in what he said before, that the posuk that exempts a Levi from taking Truma Gedayla, Rav Papa suggested, was referring even to the stage of Kri, even if the Levi took his Maisa Rishon, when after the produce was already thrashed and piled. Even then, he does not need to take Truma Gedayla. Abaya said no. Abaya says, once it's doggone, once it's become grain, the Pasuk says that Levi has to take the Truma Gedayla. But Rav Papa, he entertained the idea that possibly even then the Levi is potter. That's the Chiddush. Kumash Malon Kedushani, the Chiddush of the Mishnah is that the truth is like a buyer answered Rav Papa, that if the Levi took the produce, took his 10%, his Maaser Rishon, after it was already in a grain state, then he is required to take Truma Gedayla, give it to the Kohen. If that Truma Gedayla was not taken, it's called Maaser Rishon Sheloi Notlo Trumasoi, and the Levi is not allowed to use it to make an Eruv. Continues the Gemara, that we learnt in the Mishnah, V'loi b'maisa sheni v'hekdash sheloi niftu. If you have maisa sheni or hekdash, which has not yet been redeemed, you're not allowed to use it for the Eruv. Says the Gemara Pshita, of course you can't use it for an Eruv. It's not yet been redeemed. Maisa sheni you can't just use outside Yerushalayim for an Eruv. In Yerushalayim you don't need to make an Eruv. Yerushalayim is a city. You want to use it for an Eruv, you can't use it. And for Hektish, if it's something that belongs to Hektish, you're not allowed to use for your own private use. You can't use it for an Eruv. Says the Gemara, Loi. Tzricha, Shepod on v'loi podon. There's a Chiddush here that somebody did actually redeem it. He just didn't redeem it, Loi podon keil choson. He didn't redeem it in the way he should. There was some flaw, something wrong in the way that he redeemed it. And the Mishnah is coming to tell us, to be mechadish to us, that since it wasn't redeemed properly, the redemption is invalid and he's not allowed to use it for an Eruv. Let's try and understand, how is it possible to redeem Maisa but not Kahalocha? And how is it possible to redeem Hekdesh, not Kahalocha? So the Gemara says, Maisa shepodoy al gav asimoin. The Maisa, there's a halacha that you have to, when you redeem Maisa, it has to be redeemed on a minted coin, on a coin that has an image minted onto it. If he minted it on an asimoin, on a coin that is not minted, then you redeemed it on something that's got the right value. But since it's not a coin that can be used as currency, it's not minted, therefore the redemption is not valid. Rachmon Oma v'tzarto ha-kesef. The Torah says that the money that you use has to have a tzura on it, has to have a design on it, it has to be minted. Kesef sheyesh alav tzura, an unminted coin is not good enough to redeem Maisa. Hektish. In what case is Hektish redeemed but not Kahalocha? Shechilulei al gabe karka. If you redeemed it on real estate, on real property, on karka. Derachmono omar v'nosana kesef v'komloi. The Torah says you've got to give over, hand over money, and then the Hektish is redeemed. And he didn't hand over money, he redeemed it by making karka, real estate, he making it into Hektish. So there it's not valid, and that's what the Mishnah says, that this is called Maisa Sheini v'Hektish Sheloi Niftu, and you're not allowed to use it to make an Eruv. Continues the next Mishnah. Hashrileach Eruvoi, if somebody sends his Eruv biyad in the hands of Cheresh, a deaf mute, Shoita, somebody who's deranged, somebody who's crazy, somebody who's not normal, somebody who's got no sense, the cotton or a minor, Oy biyad misha eino moida be'eruv, or somebody who does not acknowledge the halachas of Eruv, which we'll see certain types of heretics who did not accept the rabbinical rulings, and they do not agree they do not accept and acknowledge the concepts of Eruv. If somebody sent his Eruv Tchumin with any of these, Einoi Eruv, then the Eruv is not valid, because you don't know that these people actually put the Eruv where you wanted to put an Eruv. How do you put an Eruv? You send food. If a person himself goes to where he wants the Eruv to be, and he's there at the onset of Shabbos, he doesn't need an Eruv. He's the Eruv. You don't need food that is representing him. He's there himself. The idea is, if he's in the town and he wants to be able to go beyond 2,000 amos in a specific direction on Shabbos, and you're not allowed to, it's outside the Tchum. So if outside the town you put, within 2,000 amos from the town, you put an Eruv, you put some food, the food represents the person. It's as if the person acquired his Koina Shvisa there. It's as if his place of residence is now in that place. And then it's as if he resided there when Shabbos came in, and then he can go 2,000 amos in any direction from where that food was. That is the concept of Eruv Tchumin, as we've seen till now. But you have to make sure, number one, you have to make sure that the food item that you sent there on your behalf actually got there. Number two, you need somebody who, when they place the Eruv, they have the ability to have an intention, to have the machshava, to be able to say, I'm placing this in order that the owner of this food will be able, or for the intentions of being Koina Shvisa here, of acquiring, so to speak, a place of residence where his food is. And that is how the Eruv Tchumin works. So if you have if you send it with a Cheresh Shoita V'Kotten, with people who are not responsible, or somebody who does not acknowledge Eruv, they may not have put the food there at all. And even if they have put the food there, who says that they have the ability of having an intentions? We generally disregard the intentions of a Cheresh Shoita V'Kotten, because we say that he doesn't have intentions. His mind is not clear enough to have any intentions like this. And therefore, the Eruv is not valid. However, if you arranged before that you're going to send the food items with a Cheresh Shoita V'Kotten, or this person who is a Kuti, who doesn't believe in the halachas of Eruv Tchumin, and you arranged for somebody else to take the food items from them, and that somebody else will place the Eruv in the designated place with the right intentions, Hareza Eruv. That's no problem, as long as the person is responsible and is going to put the Eruv in the right place in the right way, then it's a valid Eruv. Says the Gemara, the cotton loy? Can a cotton really not be a shliach, be a messenger, an agent on your behalf to do a tchum, to do an eruv? V'omer of huna cotton goy v'sa eruv. We know that there's other types of eruv. Eruv echatzeros, for example, where we need some food that from all the peoples in all the homes of a chotza, they have to each represent, they each have to send some food and put their food into one of the homes. And that combines all the people as, so to speak, living in one home. And that way they can all carry from their homes to each other's homes and from their homes to the chotzer. And the kohen is allowed to collect the food from all the neighbors. So you see, a cotton can collect all the food from the neighbors. You see that a cotton can be somebody, an agent, to collect and transmit and transport the eruv. So why now Mishnah can he not? Says the Gemara Lo Ikashya, it's not a question. Kan be'eruvei tchumin, kan be'eruvei chatzeris. Regarding eruvei chatzeris, all he has to do is transport the food from the respective homes into a single home. A cotton can do that. Over here, the cotton has to actually make a transaction. He actually has to, so to speak, put the eruv there with the intention on behalf of the owner of actually requiring residence there. And that is something that a cotton cannot do. Continues the Gemara, we saw in the Mishnah, you cannot send an eruv with somebody who doesn't acknowledge the halachas of eruv. Who's that? Man? Omer of Chizda Kutoi. These are the Kutim, which are mentioned already in the Nevi'im, which were a group of people that did not accept the Torah Shebal Peh, did not accept what the Chachomim said, and therefore they did not agree with the halachas of Tchum. Continues the Gemara. However, if you arranged for somebody else who's a believing, healthy adult to take the food from any of the above and put it where it's supposed to go, then the Eruv is a valid Eruv. Asks the Gemara, why are you not afraid that the Cheresh Shoit of a cotton or the Kuti didn't actually go to this place to meet the person that was supposed to take the Eruv? Says the Gemara, Kada Omer of Chizda, we'll soon see where of Chizda said it, but of Chizda said, we're talking about that he could see that the Chere Shoit of a cotton or Kuti actually took the food to the designated place to meet this other person. We're talking about that he's standing and seeing that he got to the place. Asks the Gemara, v'dleichash dilmalei shokil minei. Maybe the chere shoita cotton or kuti reached the designated place, but maybe that other shliach, the agent that was supposed to take it from them, maybe he didn't take it from them. And maybe he did take it, but then he didn't go to the designated place to make the eruv, to put the eruv there. Says the Gemara, Kada Omer of Yechiel, we'll soon see where Rabbi Yechiel said this, but Rabbi Yechiel said, Chazoka, there's a presumption, you can assume, Shliach Oysa Shlichusai. Somebody who commits himself to be an agent, to be a Shliach, to do something on your behalf, we can assume that he's actually going to do it. Hochanami, so to hear, Chazoka, Shliach Oysa Shlichusai. If you arrange with somebody who's a mature adult, a believing adult, that he's going to be responsible to take the air of the food from these people and put it in the designated place to make the Eruv, then providing you see that these people actually met up with the Shliach, then we assume that the Shliach took it from them and made the Eruv. Vehecha itmad Rav Chizda. Where was this Rav Chizda that we quoted said when Rav Chizda said there's a concept of Oymid Vareyu? V'Rabbi Yechiel. And where is this Rabbi Yechiel who said that Shliach, Oysa Shlichusa, there's a Chazaka that a Shliach does what he committed himself to do? Aha itmar, they were said on a brisa. D'tanya, nosnoi lepil. If somebody gave his eruv to an elephant, v'hoilichoi lekoif, and this elephant, or somewhat intelligent, went and took it to and gave it to a koif, to a monkey, v'hoilichoi, and the monkey went and he took it to make the eruv. Ein ze eruv. This is not considered an eruv. V'imomal acher lekabloi. However, if you told somebody else who's a human being, a mature adult, and you told him, take the eruv from the monkey who has received it from the elephant and position the eruv where it's supposed to go with the right intentions, then im omal acher the kable menu raise the eruv, then it's a valid eruv. Asks the Gemara of a dilmole mamtile, maybe the elephant won't go to the monkey, maybe the monkey won't go and give it to the shliach. So how can you know that the Eruv ever reached its destination? Omer of Chizda, this is where of Chizda said, Bo'imid v'ra'eyu. You saw the elephant giving it to the monkey, and you saw the monkey going to the place where this shliach, where this agent was supposed to be. V'dilmalei mekabalei minei, maybe the agent didn't receive it, didn't take it from the monkey, and maybe he didn't put it in the right place, didn't make the Eruv. And this is Omer Yechiel. This is where Yechiel said, Chazoka, Shliach, Oysa, Shlichusoi. We assume that a Shliach an agent that committed himself to do something, that he's going to be loyal to his commitment, and he's actually going to make the Eruv, and therefore the Eruv is a valid Eruv. And Yemirtz Hashem, we're going to continue this sugya in the next shir.